This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
I do carry a huge amount of chocolate, as anyone would know, and being a nurse, a very fully stocked first aid kit and lots of drugs. And I always seem to over-carry things. You know, I've got, you know, three pairs of gloves, even if it's June. One of the things that I really always say to people is have something when you're back at the car, have something to look forward to when you get back, whether that be a little ice box with a can of cold pop, and most importantly, a really clean, fresh pair of socks to put on, because that is the most amazing feeling when you've been walking out and you've sweated all day and you put on those lovely... It's indescribable.
How do you top that, Jo?
Oh, that's an amazing packing list. I think I definitely go for a hot drink, regardless of summer or winter. It can be the hottest day of the year and I still love a hot drink. And it's not me, but the friend that I walk with very regularly, her top tip, I think, would be, I'm kind of stealing it, when you get back to the car, she's got a bottle of peppermint foot spray.
Oh, that's a good one.
Which is amazing, actually. So you take off your muddy boots and your hot, sweaty socks and spray this foot spray, and it's nice for your drive home.
Top tips on what to pack for an enjoyable day on the hills. And who better to ask than Anne Butler and Jo Deitch? Anne has recently become the president of Mountaineering Scotland and Jo the chair. They're the first women to ever hold these top positions. I'm Rachel Stewart, and for this edition of Scotland Outdoors, I joined them on a walk up Glen Tilt near Blairathal to basically find out what their hopes and aspirations are in their new roles. I started by asking Jo when she developed a passion for the hills.
Well, I grew up in a family which is quite outdoorsy, I would say, into mountaineering, hill walking, and lots of other things. But I was probably one of those kids that was dragged up hills, I think, rather than bounced up them. And I was away from Scotland for about a decade, living down in London for work. And when I came back up here, it was definitely one of the things, well, it was one of the reasons that brought me back up to Scotland, actually.
Why? What is it that had changed in you?
I don't know. I'd grown up doing lots of outdoorsy things, so a bit of walking, skiing, camping, rock climbing. But I think after going away and kind of pursuing a career, I guess, down south, I realised that actually I probably prefer being in the countryside. And I think the Scottish outdoors and the Scottish wilderness, there's just so much to explore, and hill walking for me was the way that I wanted to do that. So obviously there's lots of ways to do it, but I started to hill walk actually with my mum when I was coming up on holiday, and it was just something that I thought, you know what, this is an amazing way to spend your time and to challenge yourself, like I said. So yeah, it's just a really lovely way to spend a weekend. And one of the things about it is, I guess, it does take up quite a lot of time because you can't always go hill walking when you want to because of the lovely Scottish weather, which sometimes throws a bit of a challenge in your path.
So probably the love for it was planted as a child, but yeah, it didn't really blossom into a full love affair until you're a wee bit older.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. I think my dad could definitely attest to that because he was probably the one that was dragging me up the hills, as mentioned. Actually, I remember coming up to Glen Tilt I was probably 8 or 9, camping with a friend and absolutely loving that. And we camped down by the river, just a bit further up from where we are now, actually. And so I was really into my camping, but I probably had a few experiences when it was less pleasant weather-wise when I was younger. But yeah, it's something that's always been part of my life, for sure. And I suppose when you get a bit older, you have the choice and the freedom to decide where you're going to spend your time and what you're going to do as your hobbies. And I think it's also such an amazing community, you know, the hill walking and mountaineering and general outdoors community is such a great one, and it's very, very welcoming.
We're suddenly hearing the river tilt just at the foot of this bank, aren't we? How did you get into hill walking? Was it something that you did as a child?
Most definitely not. Now, I'm from London, and the most active our parents were taking us for a stroll around Richmond Park or onto the South Downs to look at plants. So that was my introduction to the outdoors. I lived in Devon for many, many years, and explored Dartmoor and Exmoor, mainly on horseback, because I did endurance riding, competitive endurance riding, and spent huge amounts of time, you know, just exploring the valleys and the tours of Dartmoor. And my husband's in the Royal Navy, and we used to come up to Faz Lane now and then and drive around, and I was absolutely mesmerised by this landscape. It was just, compared to what I was used to in Devon, was just off the scale. And I've always, and I have to admit it early on, had a very obsessive personality. And we were in a bookshop, and I saw the Munro's book, which actually had a list. And it gave me, I thought, well, this is good. This is something, you know, I can focus on. And we started just, you know, exploring the hills. We weren't athletic. We weren't hill walkers. We were used to walking, because we'd walked on Dartmoor and around the coast of Devon quite a bit. But to me, it was a whole new level of challenge, because, like I said, I'm not a natural athlete. And when you got to the top, you might not have seen anything, but for me, the sense of achievement that I'd done something that was totally out of my sort of my comfort zone and my level of experience, and it was like a drug. The sort of the endorphins kicked in. I felt good and I wanted more. And really, within the sort of the first year of driving up and down the M6 repeatedly, I was absolutely hooked on it. And we were lucky enough, 15 years ago, my husband had a transfer to Faz Lane, so we moved here, and I retired from nursing and was able to sort of devote myself just to, you know, walking up things all the time. And I think, you know, I never really envisaged how much it would change my life for the better, because I feel, you know, being in the outdoors for me has made me a much stronger and more confident and resilient person. I've formed, as Joe said, I've formed some absolutely amazing lifelong friendships with people I've met through hill walking, people I would never have met beforehand. You know, the experiences that we've shared are experiences that you could never repeat. And, you know, it's something unique. You're in the moment, you're on a summit watching a golden eagle swirl beneath you. You might be in lashing rain where the water's running down through your waterproofs and coming out of the bottom of your boots. You look back on that and laugh. And it's just something that carries you through those dark times. You know, in lockdown, when we weren't able to access the hills, you just thought, well, you know, those times will come again. We'll be able to go back and experience the benefits of being up high, challenging ourselves. And I think, you know, my message is for anybody, you know, we've, as Joe said, we've got all this on our doorstep. We have so much. Wherever you live in Scotland, there's some outdoors. It might not be as stunning as Glen Tilt or the Cairngorms where I live, but, you know, there's always somewhere to go. There's a small hill to start challenging yourself and starting exploring. And my message to anybody is to just, you know, go out and give it a try. And you might find, like me, it sort of gives you a totally new focus in your life.
You are a prolific hill bagger.
Yeah.
Do you like a list, Anne?
Oh, I love a list. I love a list. If it's not on a list, I feel it's a wasted day. No. No, I'm unfortunately, and my husband has said to me, I'm not even allowed to mention this in public, but my family used to take me train spotting. So I think from a very, very early age, I've been used to sort of ticking things off on a list. And hill walking does everything. You know, you've got the satisfaction of a goal achieved at the end of it, but you've usually had a very memorable day out getting to that little tick at the end.
And you've got so many ticks because you have achieved the SMC's full house, haven't you? Twice.
Yeah, twice, yeah. Well, it was actually a friend of mine. I mean, I have to admit, I had the Munro blinkers on, totally. And, you know, if it wasn't a Munro, it wasn't worth climbing. And we were a little bit derogatory about some of the other lists. And then a friend of mine who was also heading towards a full house was constantly singing the virtues of things like Graham's and some of the nicer Donald rounds in the Borders. And I was very sceptical, but he was right. And I try and encourage people, you know, everybody seems to be focused on the Munros. I mean, it's like Everest. It's the biggest. It's the most well-known. But they're not the best. You sometimes get a better view of the surrounding countryside and the bigger mountains from something of lower height. And there's some absolutely iconic hills that, you know, don't reach Munro status. And you can go there and you can have a day where you're just on your own, or you're with your partner or your friends. You don't see anybody. There's not a well-worn path. There's no car park. And it, to me, it's slightly more challenging because you have to do a lot more planning. And I enjoy the planning as well. I don't just sort of like, you know, getting a guidebook out and following the route. I like to get a map and, you know, plan a day myself. And I really would say to anybody that's looking at getting into hill walking, don't make the mistake I did of getting totally bogged down with Munros. You know, get a good general hill walking guidebook or some really good maps and have a look and see what looks interesting to you. And in the northwest, you know, up in Ascent and places like that, there's some absolutely stunning mountains, some of the best in the country. Only two of them are Munros, which have got an absolute motorway of a path on, whereas the smaller ones, you won't see anybody, but you get some of the most amazing landscapes, seascapes, and, you know, the geology is absolutely incredible.
Your advice is just do everything,
yeah.
I think,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Remind me what a full house comprises.
Well, the SMC, the Scottish Mountaineering Club, record... If you want to record your Munro completion, you do, and you get a number. And they also have six lists. They have a Munro, which is, as everyone knows, Munro Tops, which are subsidiary 3,000-foot peaks. They have Corbett's, Graham's, Donald's, and Firth's, which are the Munro height hills in Wales, Ireland, and England. And there's only 34 Firth's, but depending on where you live, they can actually be very, very challenging. I mean, I live in Avonmore. So going over to, you know, the southern, southwestern tip of Ireland, or going to North Wales, you can't just, as Joe said, you can't just nip down and take advantage of the weather. You know, you have to plan those with military precision.
You certainly do.
Yeah.
You have both achieved impressive firsts within the last few months. Jo, you have become the first woman to be the chair of Mountaineering Scotland, and Anne, you are the first female president. Mm-hmm. How does that feel, Jo?
It's an amazing feeling, actually, and something that I'm really proud of, yeah, but also incredibly honoured. Mountaineering Scotland is a brilliant organisation, run by, you know, a very small team, actually, for what they achieve. So we've got an excellent CEO in Stuart, and he's supported by a brilliant team of permanent staff. And then there's a voluntary board who help with the running of the organisation, effectively. And I've been on the board for a few years as the director of clubs. And so to move into the chair position is, you know, it's a huge privilege, actually, and something that hopefully I'll be able to bring some experience to. And I think also, you know, in terms of what you mentioned around being the first female in that position, mountaineering traditionally, I suppose, and it's been interesting since it's come out that Anne and I have taken on these positions, the feedback that we've had, it has been a sport that's been relatively dominated by men. And so I think while a man or a woman would be able to do a brilliant job in either of these roles, it's really nice to see that representation changing a little bit and more females coming into positions like this and leadership in sport. And I think also it kind of reflects what's happening within our membership, because we're definitely seeing more women taking to the hills, getting into exploring the outdoors, joining our membership, whether or not that's as individuals or as part of clubs. And it's something that we massively embrace, and hopefully as an organisation we can reflect that, and us joining the board in these positions will hopefully help to do so.
Why do you think that is? What sparked the change?
We're at a point in history where there's an enormous change in women's sport across the board. You know, if you look at what's been happening with the Lionesses, even there is a big change in female sport, and I think it's definitely something that is becoming more. We're trying to make it more accessible. I think social media is probably helping a little bit with that, allowing females to spread their message and spread, you know, the benefits of actually taking part in sport. And I think also because I think it's quite linked with what's going on around mental health and the fact that we're all much more willing to talk about it. So therefore, women and females taking part in activity are also more willing to talk about the barriers that we have potentially to entry of getting into sports. And mountaineering, you know, I think mountaineering slash hill walking in the outdoors in Scotland, you know, you can almost, you can start it at very entry level, and it's not difficult at all. You know, look where we are now. You don't have to start by winter mountaineering up in the Cairngorms at all. So I think that the sharing of all of that stuff in the media and on social media is allowing people to see that actually maybe it's something that they can go and give a shot at on a nice Saturday. You know, we're not going to say if you've never had any experience in the hills, go out on a bleak December day when there's a blizzard forecast. But what we might say is, you know, just go down one of your, into one of your local forest paths, and that might be a way to start getting into it, I suppose. So there's definitely changes there. And I think also we're seeing so many women out in the hills by themselves and exploring in groups of females. So I think there's something as well around the knowledge sharing of that. And, you know, girls saying to women and other girls, come out with me, come and explore with me. And I do most of my hill walking with an excellent school friend. She loves it, and we really enjoy being out together, and we kind of are growing in confidence together as a result of that.
We're certainly on the kind of walk that's pretty accessible, isn't it, to a lot of people today. And it definitely feels like we're approaching spring, doesn't it? There's just that lovely feel in the air. Though I have to say, we just turned the corner and I noticed there was snow still on the peaks. Just a stark reminder that we're not out of the woods yet. Anne, you put out a statement when you were appointed as the first female president, which said that you wanted to be a role model, that you wanted to help remove real and self-imposed barriers. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think a lot of women lack confidence. I mean, women, and I'm very generalising here, but women are usually slightly more risk-averse and a lot more cautious about an activity. And if you have never done it before, and particularly women of a certain age, you may have brought up children, not had a career, and you want to do something for yourself, you've got that time for yourself, it's very difficult to know where to start. Now, I started later on in life. You know, I wasn't lucky like Joe that had parents that sort of, you know, nurtured me into the hills. And it was a massive learning curve. You needed to know so much to keep you safe and to give you the confidence to do that. And I think when you look at social media, I mean, I find it quite off-putting sometimes that there's so many absolutely sylph-like women that are at the top of a hill. They've got not an ounce of sweat on them. Their hair's...
We're just pulling into the side because a van's about to pop past us.
These women look absolutely stunning. Now, in reality, none of us look like that at the top of a hill. And I think if you think, you know, these women have got there, they've run to the top, that's something that you might feel slightly off-putting, think I'm not fit enough, I haven't got the experience enough. But I can honestly say that I haven't got to a hill yet where I haven't got to the top and collapsed in a sweaty heap going, phew, I'm glad I'm there now. It's hard work.
It is hard work.
It is hard
and
work.
And
you don't
have to be an athlete to do it.
And that's what I really want to get across. The hills are there for everybody. Luckily, with Mountaineering Scotland, if women feel that they're not confident to go, you know, go out walking with a group of men, or they feel that they're uncomfortable in a learning situation with a group of men, Mountaineering Scotland run female-only courses in navigation, winter skills, climbing. So, you know, that's there, where women are in an environment where the role model's there. The people taking the courses are women, you know, professional outdoor women leaders. And it's to show, you know, I think if there aren't any role models in existence, you know, women have got no one to look up to and say, well, you know, if that person's done it and they've got from, you know, an office-based career to running their own mountain guiding business, or this person who's, she doesn't look like a natural athlete, but she's made it up a lot of hills and thoroughly enjoyed it. I think that's the message I really want to get across. And just really saying to women that there really are no barriers. You've got to just have the confidence to say, I'll give it a go. And as Joe said, come up for a walk on a forest track. Enjoy being outdoors. Get used to being cold and wet, because that's what hill walking's about. You're going to spend a lot of time getting cold and wet. Now, don't feel that you've got to climb a Munro. Exhaust yourself. Put yourself off. Don't enjoy it, and that's it. You say, well, I didn't really like that, it's not for me. You know, build up gradually, and you really will. It'll open such a lot of doors.
Is there a variety of people from different socio-economic backgrounds using our hills and Munros? Or does it tend to attract the well-heeled? Because, you know, a lot of the gear that you see, particularly advertised in magazines, glossy magazines, is really expensive.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely changing, thankfully. But I think if you look back on the kind of main demographic of mountaineering and hill walking in this country, it would probably be a slightly higher socioeconomic group, but it's definitely changing. And I think that is probably one misperception and one a potential barrier to entry that people think, oh, to be able to start hill walking. So let's say hill walking rather than mountaineering. To start hill walking, I have to have all this fancy kit, and you definitely don't. I think you've got to make sure that wherever you're going and the weather that you're going out in, you're properly equipped, for sure. And there's definitely certain things that I would say, and you can find all of this on our website, that you should be carrying in your bag with you, because you never know what's going to happen, so you should be prepared. But really, you need a good windproof, waterproof jacket and a good pair of boots that you're comfortable in, as long as it's not going to be horrendous weather.
So that's maybe a map and a compass and not just your mobile phone.
Yeah, and that's actually a really interesting one as well. And we've done some stuff recently around Smart Nav, because a lot of people are taking to tech to navigate now, as we are, you know, across lots of our life, pieces of our life. But yes, we would always recommend a map and a compass if you are, as a backup, if you do want to use your mobile phone. And again, on that, there's lots of stuff on our website. And with the navigation side of things, that's a barrier to entry. And honestly, I'm really not very good at navigating, and it's always been a blind spot for me, but I'm trying, and I'm trying to learn and get better. And I don't know if it's a personal thing. I think it's worse than it is. But we do lots of courses, like Anne said, around navigation, summer and winter, and that's a really good place to start. But yeah, you don't need lots of fancy kit. And also, what I would say is, you know, you can always borrow. If you know someone that might have a jacket you can borrow before you go and spend lots of money on one, that's maybe a good idea too.
I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of snobbery around gear. You know, we see all the mountain professionals dripping with labels. You know, it's got to be mountain equipment, or, you know, Architrex or Rab, or, you know, things that, like you said, cost hundreds and hundreds of pounds. Where there are shops where you can get perfectly good, you know, jackets that will keep you dry, will keep you warm. It doesn't matter. As long as they do the job, it doesn't matter what the label is. You know, go and buy something in Mountain Warehouse that's going to keep you warm and dry while you walk up Mila Buckle or Craigellachie in Avonmore. Don't worry about spending £300. You can spend a small fortune on hill walking, but a lot of the stuff, you know, if you've got a pair of some decent footwear for out for walking your dog, that'll see you up, you know, the sort of forest tracks that we're walking on now. It'll see you up some of the lower hills and what have you. Again, there's plenty of Facebook pages that sell second-hand gear, people looking to exchange gear. And you can pick up some magnificent bargains on that without feeling that, you know, because you can't go in and spend £500 on boots and a jacket. That's a barrier. You know, and maybe we need to share that more and sort of, you know, bookmark these sites where people can look if they are feeling that that's a barrier to them getting out and about.
I wonder if part of the problem is that outdoor gear, and particularly sports gear, has just become quite fashionable, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we all want to be seen in it.
But we're very lucky. If you look at, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, you would go into an outdoor shop and there would be, you know, rows and rows of things for men and, you know, a couple of little, you know, token gesture for the women. Whereas now, every outdoor shop has got just as much clothing for women and men. It's just as technical. I think the only difference is some of the sizes, things like, you know, maybe ice axes and poles have still got the same size handles. So if you've got little hands, they're a little bit more cumbersome to hold. But for most women, you know, we've got the choice for any activity, whether we want to do, you know, mountaineering, walking, ski touring, we can find gear to suit us that is in a fashionable colour, a colour that makes us feel feminine and makes us feel, you know, good on the hill.
So we're encouraging more people to get out and enjoy all the benefits that we've been talking about. But does that sometimes create problems? I'm going to raise the thorny issue of paths. Now, I know that not every hill has a path, but whose responsibility is it to pay for their upkeep?
Yeah, so it is slightly thorny. And you might have heard or seen our campaign at the moment around called It's Up to Us. And that's all around repairing paths in and around Scotland's mountains. So it depends on where the path is, basically, and also what how invested the landowner is in that path in terms of whose responsibility it is. But one of the things that we're definitely seeing more and more is, as things like Munro bagging become a bit more popular, then the erosion on the paths from people stomping up and down them is becoming more significant. So we as Mountaineering Scotland feel really strongly that we can play a role in that, in making sure that the paths are looked after and cared for in the way that they need to be to, you know, to allow us to continue enjoying the hills for a long time into the future. So by raising campaigns like It's Up to Us, hopefully we can raise awareness. And also there's a piece around education as well, and how we actually use the paths up and down the hill. If we, you know, sticking to the path rather than veering off and creating lots of different paths. If you drive up the A9 north of where we are now, the path up Benyglow is an enormous scar on the landscape, you know, and it's much more significant to look at than many other paths depending on the hill. So I think we definitely are playing a part in that for sure, and should be as an organisation.
If there's one thing that you want to achieve in your new role, what is it?
I mean, at the moment we have 32% of Mountaineering Scotland members are women, whether that be through clubs or through individual members, and I would very much like to increase that. You know, so by the time I finish my tenure as president, that we have a lot more female members, because people will realise that Mountaineering Scotland is a representative body that works on behalf of its members, you know, with providing access to the hills, landscape conservation, courses, an informative magazine, and they're there to support. And I'd like to see, you know, that we get lots more women engaged in the hills, and maybe, you know, more women to take on board positions and director positions, because, you know, if we're leading the way that Mountaineering Scotland has now become representative of the wider hill walking community by having a female president and a female chair, that maybe there's no reason why in the next few years that a lot more of the board members can become women.
Tell me about an experience you've had that would inspire someone to get out there and experience it for themselves.
Oh, well, I think for me, one of the things is when we used to come up here, I was living a very, you know, I was busy in my job as a nurse and very busy living in a city. And for me, you get out of the car, whether it be for a day walk or an overnight trip somewhere, and you're walking away from the pressures of civilization and life. You know, you're walking away from car parks, from roads, you're walking out into the wilderness. And I've been at the top of hills where I've just sat there and there's not been a breath of wind and there's not been a single solitary sound. And that's happened very rarely, because it's normally wind or the sound of water. It's almost sort of meditative, because, you know, there's nothing. You can just feel the stress dripping away from you. I mean, I've sat on some of the smaller hills in Ascent, looking out to the sea, and you can just relive some of the adventures that you've had, some of the memories, some of the times that I've walked up those hills and friends that aren't around anymore, or with friends that I still walk with. And you just get a real feel-good factor, because there's so many happy memories. And you've got the views. And I've just sat there sometimes with my dog, because I often just walk with my dog. He's not a great conversationalist, but it's, you know. You know, I've been up hills. I mean, I don't walk at night as such, but I've been up on hills when the weather's changed dramatically. And you've got Brocken spectres. You've walked through temperature inversions. And you never really know what you're going to get. You look at the weather forecast, but you never really know till you get up there what you're going to experience. And some of the weather phenomena have just been absolutely incredible. You just think, well, if I wasn't hill walking, I would never have seen those. You might read them about them in a book, but you never realise what a temperature inversion is like until you're sitting on the top of a mountain, just over. It's like being in a plane when you're looking down on the cloud, just with sometimes little tops of the peaks peeping through, lying there in the sun with no sound. People would pay thousands to get that experience at a health spa, and you've got that just for a minimal amount of effort, and you've walked away from all your responsibilities. You can turn your phone off, no one can get hold of you, and it's just such, to me, it's the most liberating, and sort of, I feel free at the top of a hill. You can forget about the world.
I think a lot of people would think that's bliss, yeah. Actually.
It is bliss.
We were gently ascending the path, and we just will stop for a second here to admire the River Tilt. What a lovely view of it meandering around the landscape here. Jo, what do you want to achieve? Is there one thing you would love to achieve as the new chair?
Yeah, I think there's a huge thing for me around community and the community in the mountains. And, you know, as I said, we've got a brilliant staff team and an amazing board who are all working really hard on some of the things that Anne mentioned. And we cover, as an organisation, as small as we are, we cover an enormous amount. So we really want to represent
what our members, both individual and clubs, and some of the youth climbers also within Climb Scotland, would like to see. But I think within all of those different groups, there is a sense of being part of something. And that's really important for everybody, right? To feel like you belong somewhere. And I think for people that are going into the outdoors, so whether or not you're rock climbing, you're winter mountaineering, you're low-level hill walking, I'd love us to see, to become, and I think we are, that place where that community starts. And there's lots of people who don't actually know about us as an organisation. And I think all of the things we've talked about today in terms of getting into it, how do you do that? Then we're a brilliant place to start that. So I think there's definitely something about continuing to build that community so that it's really sustainable for the future and we can hopefully encourage lots more people to get out on the hills.
Have you got an experience that you could use as a way of selling the hills and mountains to people who are maybe a bit scared of giving it a go?
Yeah, I do. I mean, so many memories from being out on the hills in Scotland and exploring over the last few years. I think one that stands out for me is actually sleeping on top of one of the hills up in the northwest and seeing the most phenomenal sunset and sunrise when we woke up. And you know, you don't do that sort of thing if you're just getting into it, obviously, and I put a lot of planning and prep into it, and it was the most beautiful May day, so I knew that we weren't going to be hampered by the weather. And I haven't done a huge amount of, you know, sleeping out really, but that was one of the most memorable. And there's definitely nowhere better than the top of a hill to have a squash sandwich that's been in your bag for 5 hours, despite the rain, the sunshine, the snow, whatever it is. It's the best lunch spot in the world, I think.
And we're back to food again. Joe Deitch, Chair of Mountaineering Scotland. And my thanks to Joe and to Anne Butler, the new president of the organisation. I thoroughly enjoyed our chat and I hope you did too. Please get in touch if you've any comments to share, even if it's just to tell us where you listen to this. You can email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.